Well, hey everybody. Welcome back to Back Porch Theology. This is your host, Kayla Moore, and I'm sitting here on my back porch on a Saturday afternoon. Thanks for hanging out with me. We just got an email, so now you can start emailing me with questions, with comments. I'll read them on the podcast, interact with them. It's backporchtheology@yahoo.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Back Porch Theology. This is your host, Kayla Moore, and it has, in fact, been a solid month since our last podcast, and for good reason. So let me fill you in on what's been happening around my Ponderosa the last 4 weeks. I have become a grandpa. My eldest daughter got married last November, and her husband have given us a granddaughter. That's right, Zoe Noel, 7 pounds, 3 ounces of pure inheritance joy. So I'll start off by saying this, that having a biblical perspective of giving our daughters in marriage looks like us giving our daughters away to a godly young man and receiving back, oh, I don't know, tenfold return. And so the song around my house the past month has been one of celebrating God's faithfulness, celebrating God's way of doing things, his hierarchy, right? So in complete contradiction of the secularists out there and the leftists out there that they don't want to have any kids, they want to have, you know, dual incomes. No, they don't want to get married. They want to have dual incomes, 3 cars, no kids, and 1 dog, and maybe a goldfish. Live in apartments or condos in the city. We like land because God likes land, and we like having lots of kids, and we want those kids to make more kids. That way, God's kingdom can be advanced the way that he says to, all throughout the Bible, right? So we've been thinking a lot about God's promises through Noah, the patriarch Noah, to his kids about expanding their tents getting bigger. You think of Jabez in 2 Chronicles, that he prayed that God would expand his territory, expand his tent. And so as I've given my daughter away to a godly young man, and they've in turn have given us now a granddaughter, our tent or our influence in the world has gotten bigger. The arrows in my quiver have multiplied, and they'll continue to multiply as I get more grandbabies. So that's been a huge thing that's just kept me busy. And on top of that, just trying to regain business. I've been have my own business for 17 years, and back in March, all of that was stripped away. Well, 98% of it was stripped away from government tyranny and overreach and the steel-toe boot of Marxist declarations coming down from every governor. Even DeSantis, as good as he's been, he still locked the state down initially, and all that stuff was unjust and uncool and robbed my business. And so I've been working overtime trying to regain the clients that I've built up over the years, and God's blessing it, and things are going well. But it's been a crazy time. It's still all of 2020 since March has been nutsy, absolutely crazy. On top of that, just the continual work of having a healthy, godly, biblical marriage that's thriving. And not to mention, I have a 16-year-old son and soon-to-be 15-year-old daughter that require hands-on discipleship. And so it's been crazy. And not to mention the height of the fight that we're in with the leftists and training my kids to be discerning and engaging and putting down every argument that exalts itself above the name of Christ, RNC talks and everything else. It's been pedal to the metal. Home repairs, also trying to exercise dominion on our plot of land that God's given us. There's been a lot going on. All right, so recently, since the debate, actually, the first debate last week, or just a few days ago, rather, with good old Trump and, was it Sleepy Joe Biden? When the Proud Boys came up, that's been all the hoopla on the news, right? Like, the president didn't denounce the Proud Boys, and so therefore he's racist. And all just the leftist crybaby nonsense accusations that gets leveled against one of the best presidents I think we've ever had. All right, so, well, let me just take a quick little detour on that statement I just made. One of the best presidents we've ever had. So, early on Back Porch Theology, I mentioned I don't know if I want to vote for President Trump. Now, let me articulate the reason why, as best I can. So, being a Christian, a full-on, full Bible, all of Christ, all of Scripture for all of life, I believe that God regulates everything. Christ is king. He's king over every sphere of life. That means he's king over the family, he's king over the church, and he's king over the state or the government. And as a Christian, I want to see the rule of Christ being exercised over all three of those areas. What I don't want to do is compromise. Because compromisers are cowards, and compromisers have paved the way for where we are today, since post-Civil War, or war between the states. Okay, so we'll definitely get into that in later episodes of the podcast, but suffice it to say for now, what I don't want to do is compromise, and I know a lot of godly Christian people voted for President Trump in 2016 out of pragmatism or out of fear. They kind of plugged their nose and voted for Trump because he did not have a good track record. However, big ol' however, since then, he has had such a phenomenal track record of making godly, that's right, godly, biblical legislation. It's been incredible. The majority of the things that he's done that I'm aware of have been like straight out scripture. And so his track record now has changed, and that's something that, going back to a few episodes ago, how our opponents, the left, who refuses to use logic, they don't want to allow for the possibility of someone changing. And that's actually what God does in people's lives, is he changes them. Going back to what I said a moment ago about Christ being king over every sphere of life, and his hierarchy is to be obeyed and followed, submitted to, and delighted in every area of life, God sets out in Scripture the requirements of a civil leader. And we find that in Exodus 18 or 19, when Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, is telling Moses the way that he is governing Israel is not good, because he's governing it like a king would, or a dictator, in the sense of he is the first and final authority in settling civil disputes. And so Jethro tells Moses, you need to set up a Presbyterian form of government, which is where our Christian founders got the idea of setting up the government the way that we have it. So, in short order, or in a nutshell, the Presbyterian form of government is small bodies of elders governing over small bodies and of civilians or of the populace, and so you have, Jethro said, Moses, appoint godly leaders, men who, here's the requirements, okay, men who fear God, love the truth, and hate a bribe. And then in, I believe it's in at the end of 1 Samuel, when David is near his death, he says, "He who governs over men must do so in the fear of the Lord." So that's the requirements of a civil leader. It doesn't require that he be black. It doesn't require him to be sweet and tender, like all of a sudden Joe Biden apparently is, according to all the leftists out there, that he's just the most compassionate man in the universe, which he's not. That's not a requirement. The requirement is that you fear God, love the truth, and hate a bribe. And up to then, Donald Trump, in his public life, he had not shown forth those qualities. However, the past 3.5 years, he most certainly has. And so I wouldn't rule off the possibility that Donald Trump may be, in fact, a Christian. Now, before you check, you know, write me off, hear this, that a public person can be judged, unless we can sit down and have an interview with the man and ask him pointed questions, like, have you put your faith and trust in Christ? All we have to go by is his public choices. You know, Doug Wilson said in regards to President Trump is that Christian is as Christian does. And a Christian president is only Christian so far as he rules in a Christian way or biblically. So if you guys remember going back a few years or a couple of years, the president was asked, what do you think about a civil penalty for abortion doctors? Should they be executed? And he said, well, yeah, of course. He was more biblical in his assessment on that than most biblical Christians, like reform people. So I don't know. I just think that there's more evidence in the yes column, in the yay column, than in the no column that maybe he is a Christian. So anyway, according to his track record, I have no idea why any Christian could not vote for Donald Trump. That being said, I've got my MAGA hat in my truck, in my big truck. I've got my Trump flag hanging off my front porch or the front of my house, and I hang it proudly, gladly, with exuberance. I'm excited to hang up my Trump flag. In fact, today I had some handyman over at the house doing some repairs, and I said, "Hey man, if I give you a few extra bucks, can you drill my flag into the front of my house, into the brick, so that people can actually see it? Because of where it was hanging off the wood framing around the garage door, no one could see it because of our trees and plants and stuff." So I want to own the libs, and I think every Christian needs to have that same aim. And the reason is because Christ owns the libs, because the libs are anti-Christ. They are anti-Christian. Their platform is anti-Christian. And again, I'm not saying that every conservative is pro-Christ. And that's if you've listened to some previous episodes, which I really encourage you to go back and check out some past episodes on Back Porch Theology, we've talked about how that's our problem with conservatism, is that it's like 50-yard line Christianity, because they stop so far short of being full-on biblical. Now that brings me back around to the Proud Boys. So if you were watching the debate a few days ago with President Trump and Sleepy Joe, you'll remember that the big thing that has resonated for several days now throughout the news is that President Trump did not denounce the Proud Boys. You won't denounce the KKK, you won't denounce the white supremacists, you won't denounce the Proud Boys. Now, not to mention the fact that he was being teamed up on by Sleepy Joe and Chris Wallace, the horrible excuse for a moderator. So I did what any thoughtful person would do and did a little research, thanks to my son-in-law, of who, in fact, are these Proud Boys. And so here are the tenets of the Proud Boys movement. Okay, these are, it's on their website, which is really hard to find because Google does not want you to find the website. They just want you to go off of what CNN has to say about them and what Joe Biden has to say about them and what Kamala Harris, the commie, has to say about them. But I found, thanks to my son-in-law Daniel, found the website, Core Values of the Proud Boys, and here they are. Minimal government. Well, that is a biblical idea, right? So humanism leads to statism. Humanism is the preferred version of paganism in America right now, and its ultimate end is statism. So I can agree with them there, right there. Minimal government, that's a good thing. But I would add the caveat, defined by God. So government's job is to strike fear in the heart of the evildoer, Romans chapter 13. And the evildoer is defined by God's law. And the evildoer that needs to feel the sword, which is the instrument of dominion that God gives to the state, is the sword. The criminals that need to feel the sword, first and foremost, are the rapist, execution, murderers, execution, and kidnappers, execution. Right, so that would include abortion doctors, execution. Okay, so number one, minimal government. Number two, maximum freedom. Hey, I can throw my hat in on that. He who the Son sets free, he who Christ sets free, is free indeed. And God the Son makes free men, right? And free men make free markets. Free markets make free countries. So they're two for two. They're batting 1,000 so far. Number three, anti-political correctness. Absolutely, I can agree with that. Right, so this drive of our discourse over the past, 15, 20 years now of political correctness has driven us to rewrite history as a country, has driven us to try to write God out of the history books and tearing down monuments, all because we don't want to hurt the crybaby's feelings. No. Can't go with you there. So again, they're three for three. So we got minimal government, maximum freedom, anti-political correctness, anti-drug war. Yeah, that's good. The drug war in the early 90s. Who is it? George Bush Senior, or was it Bill Clinton that started that? I'm not sure. But so whenever, just so you know, whenever the government declares war on an idea, all the, like including the war on terrorism. Now I'm glad that. Bin Laden was found and shot and died like a dog. That's a good thing. We should celebrate that and thank God for that. Along with Saddam Hussein, that's good that he died and was shot or hung. But whenever the government declares or the state declares war on an idea, you know that you are in bad territory. And I know that I'm going to shock a bunch of people when I say this, including the war on slavery. The great tyrant Abraham Lincoln, that's what he did, right? He declared war on slavery. Oh, boy. Declared war on slavery. Now, slavery is not a good thing, and we're going to get into that more. But nevertheless, whenever the state declares war on an idea and not a specific group of people or a specific nation or city state, that's you're asking for trouble. It's really just an excuse for the state to get bigger, right? So closed borders is number five. Yeah, well, speaking from a theonomic or a biblical God's law standpoint, we should want open borders, but it should be down the line, right? After we've fixed a bunch of other things. So right now, the way things are, yeah, close the borders. Build a wall, man. President Trump, build that wall. I'm all about it. Anti-racial guilt, yes, absolutely. So we can ball up, musicals like Hamilton and just throw them in the trash can. That's all trash. All of that racial guilt nonsense, that's Marxism, that's foolishness, that's humanism, that's just straight up stupid. Pro-free speech, so they have in parentheses First Amendment. Okay, so free speech is not the only right enumerated or codified in the First Amendment. Along with that is freedom of Christian, like we talked about in the last episode, Christian denomination, right? No one is free to be a Muslim. No one should be free to be a Mormon, and especially to proselytize. You're not free to build your Muslim mosque or your Scientology temple. You're not allowed to do that under the Bible or under the Constitution. Pro-free gun rights, Second Amendment, absolutely. That comes straight out of God's law. Glorifying the entrepreneur. Yes. Proud Boys, good job. Entrepreneurship is straight up Bible. All right, so every man, like I think of in Malachi, I think it's, or Micah, I'm not sure. It's one of those minor prophets in the Old Testament. Talks about the kind of the vision for the future, that every man would have his own plot of land and his own plot of land to plow and his own fig tree to rest under and to enjoy its fruit. The entrepreneur is the man that's willing to save up the capital, go out and buy the plow and the ox and till his own ground. That is a good thing. That's a good thing. So they want to glorify that. Proud Boys, I'm right there with you. Venerating the housewife. Woof. That's good. So not telling women they need to be career women outside the house, or they need to be, in the corporate life, but actually coming home to a beautiful wife standing over the stove with a baby on her hip, or a grandbaby in my case on her hip, and making something delicious for the family, that is fantastic. Coming home to a wife that keeps the house clean, yes, absolutely. And us Christian men, we need to make a bigger deal about that. That is a beautiful thing. I love the fact that I get to go out and work for 12 or 14 hours and come home to a beautiful wife that's going to give me a big kiss. That's righteous. And then give me a cold beer. That's a good thing for the housewife. So they want to venerate the housewife. Yes, Proud Boys, I'm right there with you. Reinstating the spirit of Western chauvinism. That's the last value of the Proud Boys. And what can I say? That's another fantastic core value, reinstating the spirit of Western chauvinism. So if any of that stuff hurts your feelings, then it's probably exposing of a little leftism that's in your blood. So chauvinism, I looked at my Webster's 1828 dictionary. The word isn't even in there because it was part of their everyday life. This idea that the patriarchy, that the husband rules the household, and men rule at the city gates, or, men are actually the ones that rule the city, not women. Women are at home, loved by their, and cherished and delighted in by their husbands, and respected by their children, because the father reinforces that the children respect their moms. That's the biblical vision, and that's what we need to strive for as men. So, Proud Boys, I can't disagree with any of your core values. My only complaint about the Proud Boys, as a Christian man, is that they don't take it far enough. So thankfully, the president during the debate did not denounce the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys, again, it's like 50-yard Christianity, because they left out some important things. And I heard Gavin McGinnis recently, who is one of the founders of the Proud Boys. Oh, and not to mention the Proud Boys, just to put the whole racist thing to bed, the Proud Boys are, their founder is a black Puerto Rican or Hispanic. Okay, so, yeah, racism, no. White supremacist, get a life. No, not white supremacist either. So, Gavin McGinnis, I was listening to recently, who's one of the founders or the spokesman for the Proud Boys. I heard him say things like he has no problem with homosexuals, which that's a great example of 50-yard conservatism, or how conservatism or movements like this fall short. They don't take it far enough. They don't push the ball far enough, because they're okay with things that God says is the judgment of God on a nation. When you have homosexuals having pride parades in the streets and people hanging up homosexual flags on their houses and thinking that's okay, no, that's not a good thing. So my only problem with the Proud Boys is that they don't take it far enough. They need to pick up the ball and move it past the 50-yard line and be full on biblical, because they could actually succeed, because this movement has a lot of traction, because the values it does have are biblical, and that's why they resonate with people. And the other problem is that it's reactionary to Antifa and Black Lives Matter and all these leftist, Marxist, socialist, anarchist movements out there that are being brought under the feet of Christ. They're going to be brought to the woodshed and get spanked. Now I do really like the fact that the Proud Boys, they celebrate masculinity. So they celebrate being tough, men being tough and not being crybabies, men actually going out and accomplishing something with their life, and among those things is loving a woman, committing yourself to the woman, to being a one-woman man. That's a biblical value, and that should be obviously celebrated, right, by Christians. So I want to, it reminds me, as I've been looking into the Proud Boys over the past 2-3 days, it reminds me of what I want to accomplish with Back Porch Theology, is encourage men to be men and women to be women, and to put all of God's enemies under his feet. Now, they wouldn't agree with me on that necessarily, at least not all of them or them as a movement, but a bunch of them would. And I know that because so many of their core values are straight out of the Bible. So we want to put humanism under Christ's feet, take it to the woodshed, and embolden men to be men and women to be women, for men to be masculine and women to be feminine. That's a huge part of our battle right now, men and women, Christian family out there, is if you're a man, delight in being a man. Delight in being the things that God calls you to, and that starts with taking responsibility, being the prophet, priest, and king under your domain, which is your home, your business, your church. Be a prophet, priest, and king in those areas. Women, be a helper to your man. And when he comes home from working hard, give him a big old kiss. Thanks for hanging out on the back porch with me, everybody. This has been another fantastic episode of Back Porch Theology. Be sure to share the podcast with your friends, with your family, with your kids, with your brothers and sisters. Put it in your church bulletin. Put it on your Facebook, your Twitter feed. Pass it around. We want to climb the charts. That way more people can benefit from our times here on the Back Porch. And send me an email, backporchtheology@yahoo.com. We'll interact with your comments, with your suggestions, things you want to talk about on the Back Porch. And as always, keep your hand to the plow. Remain steadfast and always abound in the work of the Lord. And own the libs. We'll catch you next time.